is Road to the Draft with Cal Toomey and Matt Edwards.
Well, the draft is done and dusted for 2017. You are listening to the final episode of Road to the Draft for 2017. Nat Edwards and Cal Toomey with you. Cal, you've pretty much fallen into a heap. You're absolutely exhausted.
I'm pretty tired, Nat, but that's okay. It's been a long year and been a busy few weeks, but it was an exciting week up there in Sydney. I spent a few days up in Sydney before the draft, and obviously the draft was at the Sydney Showgrounds, so that was a bit of fun out there. But look, it's an interesting couple of weeks leading up to it, and we'll get into that in more depth. But it was a good night, and it's always a fun night to see the kids and see how happy they are to be drafted. And obviously there's some stories on the other side of that that are disappointing as well, guys who missed out and didn't get a chance in the national or rookie draft, and that's sad for them. But certainly the guys who do get drafted, they deserve it because a lot goes into that night.
It is my favourite event of the year, outside of grand final day, obviously, which is just so exciting to be a part of. But the draft, because the kids, it's just that raw emotion and that raw excitement that they've just been drafted to an AFL club. Their dreams are coming true, and everyone's happy for them. There's good stories everywhere. So it is one of my favourite events of the year.
It's a night of hope, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
And it is, like, everyone thinks they might have just drafted Chris Judd, and, you know, or whoever it is. Someone might get a guy who's not quite that good. But look, he's all of them on the night are very pleased, and then the next morning they're all very pleased when you see them around the hotel and they do the big media opportunity.
They've got the club polos.
Got the polos on. They're always fitting pretty well, and they're always on their phones because they're getting about 3,000 messages and Snapchats and Instagram posts and all these new followers everywhere. So look, they're really excited by it, and to see the parents and families and brothers and sisters and everyone associated with them excited about it as well is really good.
Did you have a favourite moment from draft night on Friday night?
It was nice when It was nice when Hamish Brayshaw's name was called out. That was good. Obviously, Andrew was drafted really early, and I don't know Andrew as well as I got to know Angus. So I got to know Angus really well a couple of years ago when he was coming through the NAB AFL Academy and went to Europe with him in 2014 as part of that academy tour, and got to know Angus quite well over that year and the last couple of years as well. So I was really happy for them and Hamish as well. He was unlucky last year not to get picked when he got hurt, and he had the broken foot, and he played with injury as well, played in their grand final. So, look, he's a really tough operator, and it was great to see him go over there. And a nice sort of symmetry to him going to West Coast and Andrew going to Fremantle. So that was probably one of the highlights for me. But obviously, having followed Lachie O'Brien and Jaden Stevenson through the year, through going places, there's sort of an extra maybe interest and maybe a little bit of attachment to those guys, having followed their path, particularly with Jaden and what's happened with him over the last couple of weeks. And how that tough that's been for him and his family, and I guess the stress and pressure that's put place on them as that sort of heart condition came to light with clubs. So it was nice to see him go where I think he probably deserved to go, right in that top 10.
I agree. And he was so well spoken afterwards. I think I was the first person to interview him, and he was just excited. He said his he teared up as well.
He's his own person, Jaden. He's, I think probably some people would see him as a bit quirky, and it's probably, as someone said to me, it's probably not normal to have a tattoo gun and go around tattooing your mates, which is something that Jaden does do. But he's his own person, and I think he's very comfortable being his own person as well. So I think he handled that all really well.
And we can't forget that we have to mention someone by the name of Jack Higgins, who I saw has already been out at Richmond training and getting his hands dirty and very excited, and he's jumping all over the place and laughing and smiling. 100%. Yep.
I'm not sure about your question to him on the video, though. I only saw that yesterday. I hadn't seen that before.
Are you serious?
And I saw it by accident as well.
Don't you watch all of my videos, Cal?
You know what? I didn't take in all the content on Friday night, believe it or not.
This is extraordinary.
And I've heard Jack speak before, and I actually have heard you speak before, believe it or not.
Really?
So, it was a good result for Higo. Really good result.
If you haven't watched the video, it's on afl.com.au. Have a look.
I'm second denying question, his claims.
Second question.
Sliding
in.
Into his DMs. Bloody idiot. That's just purely made up.
Yeah, anyway. He's a good kid. All right, let's talk more in depth about how it is for you, because I think I'm really interested, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are really interested, into how you put together your phantom draft, first of all, and how you sort of put all the pieces of the puzzle together, because as you say, it goes right down to the wire, because you do a late mail. So your phantom draft dropped on the Wednesday night. You did a late mail on Thursday evening. And then even just a couple of hours before the draft, we did another little video update on Twitter, I think it was, because you had some more mail. I mean, how many phone calls are you making during draft week?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like I've got the hardest job in the world, because I don't.
But it is hard.
It's difficult. It's not a tough task, but it's not like I'm you know, curing cancer or being a brain surgeon. So it's not got that much importance. It's not got that much importance, and I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about it like that. But to take you through the week, just because I think some people could be interested, as you say.
I'm totally interested.
Leading up to draft week, I probably in the probably 3 or 4 weeks after or before the draft, that's really when the phone calls start to happen and you start to call around and see who might be interested in who's hearing what. And those phone calls can range from club people to player agents, to people surrounding the players themselves, the guys you know. So, look, there's all sorts of sort of contacts there, and that sort of gradually builds up and you get a bit of a bearing on or a bit of a read on who's sort of in the mix for that top 30. Obviously, we do the top 30 and then the club-by-club whispers beyond that. So there's not just interest in the 30. There's also very much an interest in the players beyond those guys. So I have to keep a note of every sort of conversation just so I don't forget it, because I do often find that if I don't write it down, it'll go. So in the week off the draft, though, I think the Monday and Tuesday night were both nights where I probably finished work around 9 o'clock. I get home and still be on the phone to clubs.
Yep.
And it's tough actually to sleep those nights because you're on the phone all day.
Yeah, you're thinking. You're thinking,
and you're actually talking for, you know, 6 hours a day or just on the phone, which is ridiculous. It's not healthy for you at all, I'm sure of it.
Do you dream about the draft at night, Ben?
I wake up a lot, but I don't necessarily dream about it, but I do wake up a lot because you don't sleep well when you're on your phone that much anyway. Yeah. That's just one of those things. But, yeah, so Monday and Tuesday was like that, and then I think even Tuesday night was even maybe a little bit later by the time I got off the phone and was still texting around and trying to work out who's going where. And by that point, sort of obviously by that stage of the lead up, I knew who was going to the draft. I'd been able to work that out through conversations and contacts and everything like that. And that probably happened a couple of weeks before that. So at that point, I knew there was 18 to 20 guys going, if you included Nick Shipley and Patrick Nasher, who were invited by the AFL. So the other 18 players or so were nominated by the first 13 or 14 clubs. So that does give you a read on who's sort of in the mix for those early selections. On Wednesday morning, got one of the first flights up to Sydney from Melbourne and sort of lobbed into the lobby, I guess, of the Pullman out there at Homebush or Olympic Park or whatever it's called, Olympic Stadium, which is a pretty dire place, to be honest with you. The great hotel, very nice hotel.
There is absolutely nothing. It was like a wasteland.
There's not a lot to do out in Homebush. But anyway, that's probably good for me because I sat in my room all day. All day. Got room service twice and a couple of burgers and all those sorts of things. And just set up my computer and just called around and knowing that the full Phantom draft was dropping that night, I had to have a couple of versions near the top because I was still weighing up whether to go Rayner or Brayshaw or at number one. Yep. And obviously, whichever way that went was going to mean that the next four or five or six selections was going to change as well. I was still weighing up really. I had a big call to make on whether to go with Darcy Fogarty at number four or Adam Chera or obviously Andrew Brayshaw or Luke Davies Uniac. The first one I went with Darcy Fogarty because I think North was really keen on him. Yep. He was a star, and I just think he is a star still. But I knew that one of the midfielders obviously was a real pressing need for them as well. So that was a bit of a ballsy call, I guess you could say. But I still thought it was probably about a 50-50 chance that they went with him at that point under that scenario. However, we put it out obviously that night. And as soon as it goes out, it's just like a torrent of you're an idiot on Twitter. And how does that happen? And my favourite one was probably you've got it all wrong. You've got no idea. Freo need tools, so they're going to take two tools with 2 and 5, and West Coast are going to take two midfielders.
Bow, bow.
So they banged out on both of those. So he's none from four, which I was happy to remind him of. But,
good.
But look, it can become a little bit draining when you read all the tweets and you're like, oh my God.
You can't listen to people.
No, you can't,
that.
But it's just.
It's natural, though.
It is natural. You always look when someone's talking about you.
I always read the comments, and then I have a cry later into my phone.
I didn't cry, but it can become a little bit frustrating because you're not just saying things out of nowhere. You actually Something has come from somewhere. Usually, you don't generally just pluck a player out of nowhere and attach him to a club and say, okay, I'm going to throw that box. Sometimes you do run out of players attached to picks, and also in the first first version of the Phantom Draft, there's a couple of players in there that I probably thought weren't going to end up where they were picked.
Okay.
However, if I moved them, it was going to blow the rest of it up. So I just sort of left them there and think, well, you sort of half a chance to be in that range. You might go there if a few things fall your way. But if I move you, I don't know who's going to replace you there. And I think a few people behind you are going to still go where they went. So that's where it sort of becomes a little bit difficult. But so that's Wednesday, and that all goes out Wednesday night. And obviously then Thursday, I think the rest of the crew came up and kept me some company up in Sydney. So actually, I had a breakfast partner. I think Shifter might have been up there at the time.
Oh.
and all of you guys obviously arrived,
yep, we arrived on Thursday morning.
And then there's still a few hours to go. And I knew that because this draft was so unlike any other one, in the past couple of seasons, I've been reasonably happy with the one that went out on the Wednesday night. So I haven't really changed it, and that's ended up okay. I've sort of been happy enough with that. But this year was very different.
Oh,
and
I could tell that you were really anxious about it initially.
I wasn't too anxious. Like, once it was done, it's done. It's out there. But I still thought on the Thursday there was still a little bit of movement happening, particularly with pick two, because I just got the sense that it wasn't going to be Luke Davies Uniacke. And thought it was probably Adam Chera. So I went with Adam Chera too. And that obviously meant that Carlton, I thought, was locked into Paddy Dow, whichever way it went. I think they probably would have taken Paddy Dow one if it went like that. I think they would have taken him out of Rainer.
They loved him.
Obviously took him ahead of Chera, and obviously took him ahead of Luke Davies Uniacke. And yeah, so it might have just been a call between him and Rainer. If it was those two, I probably would have gone with Rainer. Would have seen them go with Dow. But anyway, they were locked into Dow, I thought, at three. So that meant that under that scenario, what do the Roos do? Do they take Brayshaw? Do I stick with Fogarty? Or do I go with another midfielder? So I think I had to go with the midfielder in the end because Luke Davies Uniacke was too good to pass up. So that made sense. And then Chera at five was interesting in that it was a big call there. And Stevenson with his hard stuff, I don't think Collingwood knew what they were going to do until Friday at 2 o'clock. So that made it really hard for us to work that out as well. So
we spoke to Derek Hine too, and we did a video with him on Thursday evening. And even then you could get a sense that they were really interested
in
Jaden. When we sort of put that question, he wasn't going to give anything away, but you sort of got a sense as well from that.
So that's how it all sort of works. And then at some point you have to go with weighted numbers. And that's generally my theory about the Phantom Draft.
Smart.
At that close to the draft, if 80% of people are saying something, you probably go with the 80%. You just listen to them, and if 80% of you are wrong, you know, so it goes.
And then a couple of hours before the actual draft, you put out, we did a little video on social media saying that you thought it was likely that Andrew Brayshaw was going to go at two.
Yeah. I think there might have been some sort of notification that he might have been going number two, but I only heard that afterwards. But there was certainly a lot of talk at that point that he'd been told that it was going to be.
So we had late, mate.
Yeah, late. So we had a few dips at it, but look, it was by the end of it, I was glad it was done. And you're on a bit of a hide into nothing with the Phantom Draft because unless you get the top 30 right, or if you get one wrong, then the rest of them just.
In the history of Phantom Drafts, I don't know if there's ever been one done by yourself or those who've gone before you and other publications that have ever got the top 30.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. And that would 100%.
And that is the reality. And
so it's,
you put yourself out there, so good on you. And you got 10 of the first 11.
We're counting Chera and Brayshaw as well.
They both went to Freo, two and five, whatever.
Exactly. So, it ended up okay. But it is a stressful couple of weeks because for whatever reason, your reputation's a little bit on the line. But, anyway.
Well, you did a good job. Hats off to you, Cal Toomey.
Draft night's good, though, isn't it? You like it.
I love it. I just love being out the back with the guys that get drafted.
So you watch the top 10 and then you go run out the back?
So I run out the back and we do lots of interviews one-on-one with the kids just as they've been drafted. And it's so good because you get their excitement. And then I was even there when I was standing next to Andrew when Hamish's name got called out and he got really emotional. So that was nice too, just being there and seeing those behind the scenes moments. I really love that. So, hands down, one of my favourite events of the year. Let's go into a bit of a club by club review because.
What about after the draft?
What happens after the draft?
I will just go to bed, I think.
I know you definitely don't go to bed.
Oh, I did eventually.
What time?
We started pretty late. I didn't get out of work until 10:30, 11, so, yeah.
I think we were all a little bit worse for wear the next day, although you had a later flight than me. I had an 8:30 a.m. flight. I had to get up at 6 a.m.
I did hear you on the phone to Virgin Airlines later in the evening. And wasn't that a phone call, Jack, as the airplane went. Anyway, Virgin.
3:30 in the morning. Thanks, Virgin.
They sorted you out, though, didn't they? So all good.
I had one hour sleep. Okay, let's move on. Adelaide. They obviously had picks 12 and 40. Darcy Fogarty, which I think maybe even the Crows were surprised that he
absolutely
slipped down to
12.
We'd know that they were super keen on him, but they probably weren't sure. Andrew McPherson getting picked up at 40. How the hell did Fogarty get there? Really? Like, I still don't understand.
Yeah,
how.
I think it's clubs get locked into players. They get locked into players and then they probably get their heart set on them and they don't probably think they're going to get there and then they do and somehow they just stick with the guys they've already got. I think the Saints were pretty locked into Caulfield and Clark. I think the Blues at 10 were locked into O'Brien by that point. And the same with the Giants with Bonner, who's obviously ranked really highly there. So, yeah, Darcy Fogarty, obviously the injury hurt him across the year, and that's why he got that deep, I think. And, look, it's an interesting one. Like, would he have preferred to go to a Melbourne club where maybe it's not the hometown factor, if the hometown first-round pick and all that sort of thing? Who knows? But it should be a good environment for it in play. And the same for Andrew McPherson, who was their next pick at 40. Look, I think he would have gone higher had he not been hurt with that soft tissue injury across the year. So I think they did pretty well, the Crows.
The Brisbane Lions, they obviously had the coveted number one pick. Yes. Cam Rayner was the man. And I think I saw on Instagram today, he's put out a post with him and his girlfriend saying, "I'll miss you." And he's obviously flown off to Brisbane. And you know, it's a big life change moving away from family, friends. But when we spoke to him, even, and his dad, like, I think he's going to be fine interstate.
I think he'll be fine. He's a very, very popular kid. And he makes friends really easily. And I'm looking forward to speaking to the guys up in Brisbane over the next couple of months to see how he settled in, because I think he'll be really good and they'll love him. He's a smiley, happy, personable, cheeky. He's got some confidence. He's got a really good mix in terms of what makes him up as a person. So he'll be fine. His parents, he'll miss him, I'm sure, but his dad, John, and mum, Nicole, look, they're really good people too. And the whole family, it was great to see them all up there, including the grandparents. Look, he was the obvious call and the one the Lions had to make, I think, at number one. He's the best and the leading match winner in it, so he probably deserves that top spot. Bailey, we'd sort of recognised they had an interest in him, and they were after midfielders. And to be honest, at 15 and 18, there weren't too many other midfielders there in terms of pure midfielders, so they went with him. Starcevic, a lot of clubs had pegged in that top 25, so I think a few were actually hoping that he got through to that point. And obviously the bid for Ballenden was so late that they were easily just able to accept that and move on. It's really interesting, I guess, how far he dropped across the year, but hopefully once he gets into that system, more professional one, and you can see how he goes, because it could be a good pick for them to get him so late.
Carlton, obviously taking Paddy Dow with pick 3. They got Lachie O'Brien with 10, so they did really, really well. Tom DeConning, Angus Schumacher, and Jared Garlett was an interesting one too. I think he was taken with one of the last picks of the draft.
Yeah, one of them.
My memory serves,
if not the last one. Yeah, it was an interesting one, that one. I didn't see that one coming at all, but look, they want a midfielders. They get Dow, who's going to be a lock for a long time. Lachie O'Brien plays that halfback role beautifully, and also off the wing as well. He'll be a midfielder, a hard-running wingman, I think, for a long time as well. That left foot will really add some nice class and movement to the Carlton mix. DeConning will be a bit of a project player, and Schumacher's a midfielder as well. Garlett's, look, is he worth the punt? We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. Obviously, they're sure that he's not going to be homesick again. He obviously had his struggles when he was up at Gold Coast. I think Dow, on the back of Paddy Dow and Lachie O'Brien, they should go quite well out of this draft.
Oh, indeed. Their side is looking very good. Their midfield looks really good, doesn't it?
I think, and you look at Paddy Dow at the moment, and he's got that footballer's legs about him. He probably needs the footballer's upper body, and that'll come once he can get back in the gym. Obviously, he's had the shoulder surgery, so he's sort of not quite got that at the moment, but yeah, he'd be a very popular player, Paddy. He's a star.
The Pies did really well. Picks 6, 39 and 50. Jaden Stevenson's obviously the big one.
Yep.
But Nathan Murphy, I was actually surprised that he slipped all the way down to 39. They must have been really confident to get him at that point.
Well, I said to Ash Brown next to me, I said that if Murphy's there at 39, just wait for him to absolutely read it out, because they could not read it out quickly enough. He was in the mix at number 6. We wrote that weeks ago, and I think a few people said, oh, well, you know, surely they're just foxing and all this sorts of thing. He was in the mix for sure, and obviously it's emerged that, you know, if Stevenson wasn't there and they weren't able to medically clear him, that Murphy would have been on the board. So, yeah, Steve-O, really happy that he's going there. He's a little bit like Will Hoskin-Elliott in some ways, and that's been – I wish someone had said that to me before the draft, because it's actually not a bad
comparison.
I hadn't even thought of it until afterwards, but – yeah, he's a little bit like him. I think Will's obviously a top 10 pick as well and really highly talented. Steve-O will be the same. We'll take a little bit of time with his frame to put on some weight so he's ready to go, but everything else is there. Murphy, again, in the mix there at number 6, so to get him to 39 was a great result. And Tyler Brown, all they really wanted out of Brown was to not have the bid before 39, and that didn't happen, so they were happy to match at that point.
Essendon.
Bombers.
The Bombers. The Bomb Braves. They had very, very late picks, 49, 66, 76. For those who don't know that much about, I'm sure Bombers fans have already read up, but Jordan Houlihan, Brandon Zirk Thatcher,
I'm gonna call him, surely his nickname should be like Margaret.
That's good. I like it. The Bulldog. And Matt,
I don't know if do you reckon too many players at Essendon will call him Margaret. Or
I don't
have
think
any
they
idea
probably
about.
Know who Margaret Thatcher
no.
is.
No. And Mac Welfi. Yes. So the Bombers, obviously, at 49, were the latest club to start the draft. So Adrian Dodora and the team there were twiddling their thumbs until that point. Got Houlihan, an exciting forward. I don't think he's exactly what they need. I think the sort of priority was inside midfielders, okay. but they got one there with Guelphy later yep. in the piece. And Zerk Thatcher, or Margaret, is a key defender.
Margs.
Key defender slash ruck option, who's where he played through the year. Obviously got another midfielder who I quite like in the rookies as well, and Trent Minot, Caulfield Grammarian there. I'd seen Merv Kane watching him a couple of times through Caulfield this year. But look, Houlihan could be really exciting, and I think he'll have a bit of time to build into his game, because he's not going to get a game in that forward line for a little while. Essendon's forward line's as dynamic as anyone's in the competition. So he will have some time to develop, but he certainly can do a few exciting things.
Plenty of fresh faces at Freo. 8 selections at the draft, and then 2 rookies on Monday night. Of course, they're headlined by Andrew Brayshaw, Adam Chera, and then you've got the likes of Sam Switkowski, who I'd seen play at the Box Hill Hawks, I believe, before Hugh Dixon and a couple of others. Take us through, I mean, Freo, they've just done so well.
They've gone bang. They couldn't.
I mean,
go,
having 2 top 5 picks is pretty handy.
They couldn't go wrong with their 2 top 5 picks, and especially given they wanted sort of Rolls Royces in that midfield. You get 2 there who
Very
should
close.
Be there for a long time.
Imagine
and
playing with Nat Fyfe in that.
Well, Brayshaw's living with him as well now, so that'll be exciting
Even
for him.
Better.
Yeah, Chera will be a good addition as well with his class. And they sort of complement each other too, those two midfielders through the Vic Metro team. So we'll see them at Dockerland next year. They obviously had a mix of sort of types after that. Lloyd Meakin, Jones as ruckman, Dixon as a sort of bigger forward, and North as an inside mid. To add to that depth. So a real mix, and they've obviously overturned their list pretty strong over the past couple of seasons and went the hardest of anyone at this year's draft.
Geelong had 4 selections in the draft. Lachlan Fogarty, Tim Kelly, Charlie Constable and Grian Myers making their way to the category, and then the rookies, Stuart Cramery and Matthew Hable.
Yeah, Stuart Cramery was interesting. Been on the radar a little bit, so I'm glad to see Stuart get another go. He's a good guy. Obviously went for the small forwards in Fogarty and Myers, so the local lad in Myers and Fogarty, who's sort of played mainly for the Jets, obviously, at TAC Cup level. And then they've gone for the genuine immediate impact player in Tim Kelly. They're in the premiership mode, the Cats, and they have to be in the premiership mode every year while Paddy Dangerfield's there, I reckon, because he's best player in the game alongside Dusty. So while you've got someone like that, you go for it. So Tim Kelly at 23 offers something that no one else in the draft really could with his pace and skill and ability to really come in and do it straight away. So that makes sense they got for him. Constable, they spoke to recently, and at 36, I think that was around the right mark for him. He slipped because of his running that, and that was a big question getting into the draft and where he'd actually fit in, but it was great to see him get a go at that point. So, yeah, an all-round sort of nice mix for the Cats.
Gold Coast, I think they probably surprised a lot of people with their first pick. They had pick 19, and they decided to select Will Powell. I mean, we hadn't really talked about Will all that much.
No,
so
not going to lie, we hadn't talked about him at all. And very few had.
I kind of did a double take and I was like, is this right at pick 19? So why did they pick him and what did they like?
They followed him from the start of the year around March, I think. They might have spotted him as sort of a under-18s game there at Claremont. And look, he's I've seen his tape too, and the edits look very exciting. Very, very exciting. He's slighter size at the moment. Got some Italian background in him. So he's very skillful. He's tough. He's courageous. He puts his head over the ball, and just watching some of his vision, it's quite exciting. Why they took him at 19 was because I think Melbourne had shown a bit of interest, from what I understand, in the 30s, and they had 3 picks there the day. So obviously the Gold Coast next pick was 42. There's a good chance he wasn't going to get past 3 of the Melbourne picks. So if they wanted him, they had to get him, and that's why they did. We'll wait and see. It would be a really good story if he can come off. He's one of the all-time bolters of the last sort of decade to push in that top 20 out of nowhere, RKO style. So Ballard got to the Suns at the end at 42, which is linked to them a little bit earlier, but obviously they took power with their first one. Then they got the 2 academy players in Braden Crosley and Connor Nutting.
GWS recruited my favourite player
Yours.
Of this draft.
Who's that? Brent Daniels?
Aiden Bonner.
Not Sam Taylor? Nick Shipley?
No, he might be in the top 5.
Aiden Bonner. Not sure if you listened to last week's podcast either, Nat, but Gil was on, and I did mention your Andrew Gaff.
My Andrew Gaff. And look, I probably saved Gil because I made that gaff, and then we were able to bring it up, or you were able to bring it up, and just let him know that when he was reading out the name, get it right.
No, and he did, and the Giants did. Obviously, he's the one they wanted. Offers them something a little bit different. Athletically, very, very, very strong. And look, to be honest, before his late season surge, there was probably a chance the Giants could have got him in the mid-20s, but they would have probably hoped that he sat his time on the sideline so they could have snuck him through. But they had to go up the draft, obviously through that Devin Smith trade, and get up to 11, and he was still there. Higgins was definitely in the mix at 11, but they got the small forward at 27 in Brent Daniels. So they're able to get sort of both things covered there. And then a tall backup in Sam Taylor. Langdon's a mature forward, and I guess they're looking for more small forward pressure, so they went with Dylan Buckley as a rookie, which is a bit of a surprise, and Jack Buckley as well, a taller type, the son of North chairman Ben. How many times has Sam Rebreed drafted, by the way?
Oh, my gosh. Like so many.
He gets drafted every year.
Every year, I feel like there's a Sam Reed.
Good on him.
Oh, well, keeps ticking over. I know our producer Jack had to wait a very long time for any Hawthorn draft action on Friday night. Pick 45 was where they took James Warple, Dylan Moore, which I was really happy with, a long-time, lifelong Hawthorn supporter going to Hawthorn, Jackson Ross. And then one, which is a really great story, and that was in the rookie draft, was David Mirra, who's played at Box Hill.
Him play a bit.
Stalwart there, 26, still really young, but he is just so consistent and reliable at Box Hill level. So it's fantastic to see him get a chance.
There's a good video of Hawthorn put up of Clarko congratulating him down at the club. You know, his name's been read out upstairs, and then downstairs he's training already as part of the Box Hill team at that point. James Warple, Dylan Moore, and Jackson Ross, a bit of a mix there with Warple inside mid, Dylan Moore, you know, outside runner, and Ross is a sort of medium tall forward. So a bit of a mix there. They had to wait to see what got through. I always thought the Warple would be around that sort of mark, that 40 to 55 sort of spot. And there he was, right smack bang in the middle of it. Dylan Moore dropped a little bit further than I thought he would. And I'm sure he would have been pretty nervous on Friday night as the picks ticked by. But 67 was a nice get. I mean, it's interesting though, like they obviously cut Billy Hartung as an outside runner.
Not happy about that still.
No, fair enough. And that's probably the role that Dylan Moore will take on. Sort of like for like in some ways. So
we'll get to North Melbourne too in a second, which is where Billy Hartung has ended up. But Melbourne, a bit weird seeing Melbourne with selections not in the top sort of 10, 15. Their first pick at 29, and they took Charlie Spargo.
Little Spargs. It was good to see him get a run there. So it's good that, I guess, just because you get injured for most of your top age, you can still be right in the mix as a top 30 pick, and people still go back and look at what you do well. Yeah, and that's what Charlie was able to produce in the first half of the season, stood up, and what he's produced over the last couple of years as well. So it's good to see him at the D's there. He probably starts as a small forward, eventually moves into that sort of midfield, inside midfield role.
Yep.
Bailey Fritch, a player from Casey, which they would have watched closely. Harrison Petty, the tall defender who broke his elbow last week, but he's only out for a few weeks, so pretty small fracture there, so I won't hold him back too much. And Oscar Baker, who was linked pretty strongly to the D's, they clearly want a little bit of outside run to work and complement what they do inside. We've seen what they've got inside, don't we? When they're all up and going, Jones, Brayshaw, Viney, Petrarca, Oliver, who I bumped into at dinner last night, actually.
Clayton Oliver. Really?
He's still very interested in the draft and everything.
Whereabouts were you having dinner?
Hunky Dory.
Oh, just on Swan Street in Richmond.
Well, one of them. I think, but he shows how big he is. Like in close, and you see what he can do. So I think that's why Oscar Baker would have appealed to the Demons with some outside run there.
North Melbourne, of course, had pick 4, and they took Luke Davies. Uniac, one of my favourites as well in the draft. Then they had 23, 62, 72, 77. Will Walker, Kieran Hayden, Tristan Zeri, and Billy Hartung taken with the second last pick in the draft.
I was happy for Bill. LDU, perfect midfielder for them to get. So that was a great result. Will Walker, I think, would have surprised some, but he did finish the year really well. And North took maybe a little bit more of a riskier approach, or a bit more... a couple more risks because it's a couple of their selections than maybe they have in recent years. So Corin Hayden's obviously athletic and powerful, doesn't have as many runs on the board. Add another ruckman in Cherry, and also Billy Hartung, who's got a couple of flaws, but I think he's got a few good things to his game as well that will get him through. And Gordon Narrier in the rookie draft, which I think if you haven't seen his highlights tape, go and have a look, because it's very exciting.
How do you spell cherry with an X? I like it, though. It's interesting.
I think that's cherry, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Tristan, sorry, I apologise. I probably stuffed up your name there. Port Adelaide, 47, 51, 58, 60
cherry
and
tree.
61. Great little pub, the Cherry Tree.
It is.
Sam Hayes was their first selection.
Yeah, the slider.
Yeah.
The pork slider.
I mean, we'd sort of been talking about that for a long time. It just seems clubs don't want to draft ruckman,
and,
do they?
And the question mark on him is if he's a ruckman or forward. So he needs to improve his endurance. I know I've been sort of banging on about this, but until he can do that, he won't be able to ruck at AFL level, and that's probably why I did slip a little bit further there. Kane Farrell, Jake Patmore, Joel Garner, Dom Barry, obviously Lindsay Thomas is a rookie. Gave Dom another chance too, the former Demon. Garner was a bit of a slider as well, but I can sort of see how that happened. And Kane Farrell, a good user of the footy with that left foot. So they clearly did most of their work at the trade period, and the draft was not an afterthought, but a second priority this year.
Richmond did really well, the premiers.
The
look at the players that they've brought in from the draft. Jack Higgins, Callum Coleman-Jones, and Noah Bolter, and then Patrick Naish as well. I mean, they've done pretty well.
They have. No, they did well, and Higgins was too good to pass up. They don't really need a small forward. We saw what their small forwards did on grand final day and through the finals, but I think Jack Higgins will overtake one or two of them pretty quickly if he can continue to improve his defensive
100%.
Stuff as well. 100%.
100%.
Callum Coleman-Jones and Bolter are a raw pair, but clearly the Tigers wanted to bring in some defensive cover and maybe a little bit of athletic ruck cover as well. And Bolter's actually done a little bit of rucking in his time as well. And Naish was a great result. We sort of put it out there a month ago that it was looking likely that they wouldn't have to use one of their first first rounders on Patrick Naish, and they didn't. Just on Patrick Naish, this is something that has really annoyed me with Richmond supporters coming at me saying that, oh, well, we told you he was never going to go top 15, like you said. What I've really struggled to get across is that it can't be that hard to differentiate one person's opinion on where he sits as a player and where he might get selected.
Exactly.
It's a very different thing. And I do think that sometimes with father-sons, they get through a little bit further than where they otherwise would be picked, because clubs don't put as much work into them, because clubs aren't that willing to go and be the bidders, be the bad boys and be the bidders. And it's just easier for them to let them go. There's a half a gentleman's agreement, I reckon. So
whack, Tigers fans.
I'm so over it.
Lay off Cal
Toomey. Just be happy that I rate a player that's going to your club.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to pump him up. And believe it or not, even if I tried to pump him up, a club is not going to place a bloody bid on Patrick Naish
because
I'm sitting
Cal
in a
Toomey
podcast saying he's a good player. Like, get real, for
Christ's sake. He doesn't have that much power. We'd like to think that he does, but he really doesn't.
Oh, it's annoying. It's just like, gets on your nerves, Nat.
Rant over?
Rant over.
Okay, let's move on to the Saints now, and they were so lucky. They had 7 and 8 in the top 10. Hunter Clark,
smashed
Nick
it.
Caulfield, amazing pickups for the Saints there with two good midfielders. Oscar Clavarino comes in as a defender, and then Ben Patton, really great to see
the
him
general.
Get a go after being overlooked.
The new general,
the new
little
general.
General.
The little general. You've lost it completely, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. But that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
Bloody Patrick Naish, eh? Hunter Clark. Yeah, big fan of Hunter. I think he was a really obvious call for the Saints to grab
great
them.
Hair.
Does have great hair. He's a great kid, Hunter. I really like him and
me
his
too.
Family as well. It's good to see him very happy afterwards. They would be happy staying close to home. Seaford, they're not too far down the road. So down the Mornington Peninsula there. He's a gun. Nick Caulfield as a halfback probably starts there and then eventually moves into the midfield. Oscar Clavarino, key defender. I think they obviously looked at that being a bit of a need to chuck another one in, given there are some fitness doubts on Hugh Goddard and Patton, and had a really good chance for Vic Country, all Australian players. So, yeah, good mix of players there. Probably can all start as defenders. Hunter can definitely start as a defender.
Yep.
I think he'd want to start as a midfielder, but the same for Caulfield. But I think Clark will be a player who will be in that midfield and be pretty well loved for a long time because he's so courageous and just gets the job done.
The Sydney Swans, they took Matthew Ling with pick 14, then Tom McCartan and Riley Stoddart there with 33 and 53.
Yeah, they clearly identified a need for speed, which they addressed with their first pick. It would have been interesting what they would have done if Lachie O'Brien was there at 14. I think he would have been well on the radar there. Obviously, with the the Eagles at 13 as well. I think O'Brien was on that radar too. But Ling was a good choice if that's what they wanted to get into their club as a runner off halfback, that real driver of the footy and someone who can carry and take things on. The same for Riley O'Brien at 53. I thought he was taken a little bit further back than I predicted he would be. So he was a nice get there. And in between, Tommy McCartan, who is just a super kid. And I'm really happy for him and his family that he's got a chance at an AFL list. It was always going to happen. I think the Swans have been pretty keen on him for a little while. He can be given plenty of time. It's a great club for him to go to and just relax and move into his footy career. So I think he'll take it with both hands and he'll work really hard. So you know, they have a nice little mix of prospects there.
On to West Coast, and they had pick 13. That was their first selection. I was so surprised that they took Jarrod Brander, given they already have the talls, and I figure that probably their midfield is lacking a little bit of depth at this point in time. I was really surprised. Were you?
I wasn't shocked. I wouldn't say I was that surprised because I think a fair few clubs had Brander in that sort of 12 to 24 range. But there had been a fair bit of talk about them going for a midfielder. But I wasn't absolutely staggered. I just hadn't heard Brander that much linked to them.
Yeah.
So from that regard, I was a little bit surprised. But they did surprise some, though. Some clubs afterwards were wondering. But the other thing you point with this is that they might see Oscar Allen as a midfielder going...
Yeah, because he's a good size.
He's 191, and I think that some would see him playing that midfield, inside midfield role at Paddy Cripps-like in the future. He hasn't done it yet, and so it'd be a bit speculative to say that that's definitely what he's going to be able to do. But they were able to do that. Liam Ryan and Jack Petrocelli add some real spark to their mix. Ryan will come in and kick 40 goals next year. I think you could bank that.
Yep.
Ainsworth have been linked to him as well. And Brayshaw more midfield depth at the back end. So Brandle, I think, would be good for him to go to a club, one club where he's only playing for one team under one coaching panel and settle into one position. I think that would be really good for him. He's certainly one of the more talented players in the pool. And I think consistently, if he can get that right, then that could be a steal for the Eagles.
And finally, the Western Bulldogs, they had 9, 16 and 74. And with 9, they took Aaron Norton, the WA boy. Then Red Richards,
Red,
the halfback, who I guess they probably see as a replacement for maybe Bob Murphy or more a JJ sort of type halfback.
Yeah, and it works. It works. It was a really nice fit for them, what they did on draft night. I think they had a good night. I'm a big fan of Ed. Just his ability to really change games off halfback without having to be a player who gets 35 touches. He can influence a game. You think, geez, he had a good game. And then you look at the stats, he's had 16 or 17 touches. So if he can build that up, which I think he will, he's going to be a really nice fit for them. Norton will play next year. Some of the stuff he does defensively is exceptional. So good mix for them. And Ed Richards, I think Ted Richards tweeted that he was his new favourite player. So that makes sense.
Well, he'll certainly stand out on the field, no doubt about that. And I love that his hair's kind of like
red,
an auburn.
White and blue.
Well, that's true. He matches his jumper now.
Yeah.
That's perfect. So he could never have gone to Collingwood then. Like, it's just better that he was in one of the red teams. All right, that is the club by club review. Hopefully our listeners got something out of that. And
everyone did well.
Everyone did well. Well, at this time, you can say that everyone did well. It's only in hindsight when we go back and do Total Recall, which if you haven't checked it out, afl.com.au.
Produced by the one and only Jack Haley.
That's when, hindsight's a beautiful thing. But right now, all of these kids have much opportunity in front of them.
We could give them all grades and that. And you can make assessments on what you've seen so far. And you can say that, look, we think that he might have been a little bit higher than he got picked, and I'm a bit surprised he got there, and that was a good selection for their needs and these type of things. So you can assess them, and get a little bit tired of people saying, how can you make any assessment of the draft which after it's happened? Well, if you watch games, you can.
Yeah, if you know what you're talking about.
But look, I do think it's also a bit hard and a bit harsh to say this club nailed it, this club busted it, because we'll wait and see.
The proof is in the pudding, and we look forward to 2018 where we can see some of these kids run around on the AFL field, and obviously best of luck to all of the guys that got drafted. And to those that didn't get drafted, there is still hope, because we look at Hamish Brayshaw, Ben Patton, who both missed out in their draft years.
And also look at like the rookie draft, guys getting recycled. Yeah. I think that there's been a lot of mature ages get another chance, and guys who've come through the system as 19-year-olds. So there should be some hope out there for people who did miss out.
All right, as this is our final episode of the year, it is the final time for Cal's Song of the Week, so it better be a bloody good one.
All right, well, I'm going with one. It's not even new, Nat, to be honest with you. Well, it's reasonably new. this year.
Make sure it's a good one.
Perfect Places by Lorde.
Oh, okay.
You like that one?
Yeah.
I'm only doing, I went and saw her on Sunday night, so, and it was great.
Good?
Yeah, unbelievable. Had a great time. So, I'm going with Perfect Places, Lorde.
I wouldn't have picked you as a Lorde fan.
Oh, my taste is sort of pretty varied, but it was fun. Yeah,
you
was,
went and saw, who did you see the week before? Stevie Nicks?
Got Paul McCartney next week.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, there you go. We spanned a few generations there.
I've got Sia this week.
Are you going to see her?
Yeah, I'm going to see her. I think I'm going to see her, but I'm not sure if I'll be able to see her because of her fringe.
Well, I don't like the fact you can't see her.
Is it off-putting?
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of her.
No, you don't.
I'm not a
Sia
fan.
Oh, she's got an incredible voice.
She does.
I love Sia.
What's that gold? Oh, God, let's see this.
Please don't sing ever again on this show.
Anyway, Lorde.
Stick to karaoke.
Hey, we've got some thanks to give out.
Yeah, we do.
Because this is our last show.
Yep.
Do you want me to start?
I'll start.
So in no particular order, we've had lots of guests on the show across the year.
In order of favourites?
No, they are what make our show interesting, I think. So Michael Ablett and Luke Powell from the AFL, we thank you for your time and coming in. The club recruiters make it very interesting for supporters. So, and they don't come in at a fee. We don't even buy them a coffee. We probably should. But
yeah, we should work on that.
For the guys who did come in this year, the Bulldogs, Simon Dalrymple, Richmond's Matt Clark, Brisbane's Stephen Knoll, GWS's Adrian Caruso, Melbourne's Jason Taylor, Brad Lloyd from Freo, Tony Elshaw from the Saints, and Mark Finnegan from the Roos. We thank you a lot for coming in.
And then, of course, there are the AFL State Talent Managers. We had Brenton Phillips and Adam Jones. And, of course, we can't forget the big boss. Gil. AFL CEO Gil McLaughlin, who joined Cal last week.
Yeah,
Thank you so much to all of our guests, because without you, we probably wouldn't have a show that was worth listening to.
No, exactly right. Big thanks to our producer, Jack Haley, who comes in every week and does the show for us.
And listens to us ramble on.
We did actually pass a million all-time listens last week, which is exciting. We had a party in the social network where JT comes down as the boss of Napster and Zuckerberg goes, 1 billion or 1 million. That's what we did last week at AFL.com.
So thank you to all of our listeners for your continued support.
I was going to mention them. A lot of them tweet in every week and send in their questions, and we thank you guys for...
Thanks for the abuse and the...
they're pretty nice,
those
ones.
They are really good.
Again, without your interaction, it wouldn't be too much fun. Thank you, Nat, for steering the ship and being good fun. It's been another good year of Road to the Draft. So we'll be back next year, I hope.
We will, as if we wouldn't. And thank you to Cal, because all of your fine work has been brilliant this year. You are the number one draft guru in the industry, and it's an absolute pleasure to work with you on a daily basis, even if you do annoy me with some of your songs of the week, because I just don't know who the artists are.
That's all right. It's an education.
It is. All right. Well, I guess I won't see you for a few months now.
Yeah, I'll see you in May, I think.
Are you off on any trips or anything over the summer?
We'll wait and see.
AFL Academy.
No, I'm not
stuff.
On any junkets. I might be going with the NAB AFL Academy on
the trip.
Oh, okay,
that's not a junket. Sorry.
Absolutely not that.
Well, you enjoy that. To all of our listeners, have a very merry summer.
Yes.
And we look forward to picking up where we left off on the road to the draft
in
2018.
See you later.